Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
I got to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God. My God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you.
Let's go.
There are a couple of inches different. Story might be different, but the story tonight is the Las Vegas Golden Knights capture game one. Best of seven series.
Kirby Doc, shoot the puck. Blackhawks, shoot the puck. They are too cute on the power play. They are too tentative on the attack. And offensively, that's part of the reason that Robin Leonard was not bothered at all. I think Robin Leonard is one of those guys you want to agitate. He likes being agitated. He loves the drama. He craves the attention. Give him more. Make him earn it. Last night, he was better than Corey Crawford. But the Hawks did not challenge him in the way that the Golden Knights challenged Crawford. Crawford needs to be sharper. There's no question about that. But I think it would be oversimplifying it just to say one goalie was better than the other, when I think it had more to do with depth, it had more to do with talent, and had more to do with the attack mode that the Hawks just lacked.
Mike Mulligan.
He's fearless, he's observant, and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner, he's intelligent, he's innovative, he has strong character.
We just believe collectively there's too much uncertainty at this point in time in our country to encourage our student athletes to participate in fall sports.
I tend to take a little more forgiving approach when it comes to the Big Ten and how they handle things, because I think still, David, from a national standpoint, they're doing the right thing. And I think a lot of times people are so afraid to make mistakes that they're going to double down on some bad decisions. And when those bad decisions mean health effects that we're still trying to grapple with and perhaps life and death, what's it worth? So I don't mind that the Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren decided to take a step back, reevaluate, and then make the decision he did, because somebody had to make it. Somebody has to accept this, I hate to use the phrase, but uncomfortable truth about what we're dealing with as a society right now.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Let's go. Mully Hawk, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today. We are having a conversation about college football. We'll get back to in a moment. We also had talked about the Blackhawks, 4-1 losers last night. If you stayed up until early this morning, it ended about 10 past midnight, I believe. They lost to the Golden Knights in game one of their seven-game playoff series in the Western Conference. That was not the effort the Hawks were looking for. Corey Crawford was not as sharp as you need him to be. And Robin Leonard only had to save 20 shots, or see 20 shots, and he saved 19 of them. And the Hawks have to be better offensively on the attack in game two on Thursday at 4:30, Layla.
Yes, if they want to still somehow stay in this and ride that momentum wave that they got from being Edmonton and making everybody super excited, that has to be the case. But it's just like you said, David, the fact that Vegas has such incredible line depth when it comes to who can score and at what point, how, it's an onslaught. They are number one in this season in a lot of offensive categories. That was before last night's game. But when you think about how they can score, the ways they do it, whether it's a high danger chance scoring per 60 minutes, you've got to like their chances in a game. And the Hawks, nothing against Brandon Saad's amazing pass. That was something that was just outstanding to camp. But you have to have more offensive threats than that. And you mentioned the power play. That is significant for the situation. Everybody talked about the need for the Hawks to start strong, and that unfortunately was magnified last night.
Both baseball teams in Chicago won, got back on the right track. The Sox beat the Tigers 8-4. The Cubs beat the Cleveland Indians 7-1. John Lester, strong outing for the Cubs. But we have been talking mostly about the monumental decision made by the Big Ten on Tuesday. They made history by postponing the college football season until 2021. The spring, we don't know what that will look like yet. There have been no models put forward in terms of whether it's going to be an 8-game season, a 10-game season. We will deal with those ramifications and possibilities later. The Pac-12 followed suit a few hours, but right now it appears the ACC is going to move forward and play. The SEC has shown no signs of backing off. The Big 12 has teetered, kind of on the fence of what will they or won't they. And Layla, I think this has been interesting talking about the idea that I think Hank from Clemson called in to suggest, and other people have offered this opinion, that it is easier to contain the potential spread of coronavirus by letting football players play football. And I know what they're getting at, but I think right now it's easier to suggest that because they're in a controlled environment of fall camp, two-a-days, all-days, whatever it is. There's not the student population that is going to be joining their campuses. That's when it gets trickier. That's when you can't put these guys in a bubble. The social temptations, they're going to be around other students, thousands of students. I just don't buy that argument that it's safer to play football and control the spread than it would be by not playing football.
I love how we still can't quite understand the whole situation. It's not even necessarily that direct. Like, we talk about how if one player makes a bad decision or it's going to affect everybody, that's not it either. I don't think anybody prior to March of this year went out saying to themselves, I'm going to catch a virus today if I don't do everything right. I don't think that was the case at all, at least when you're going about your normal everyday life. Now, what you do behind closed doors is your own situation. But you know what I'm trying to say. The reason why we use the term bubble so much is because that's probably the only way to control this. And they talk about how it's possibly airborne. You are rolling some immense dice when you take into account all of the variables that go into college football. I'm still flabbergasted by the idea that some of these schools think they're going to have fans. That's when I really have to raise an eyebrow. But you can't control for all the variables. You just can't. People are human. And I don't think anybody who's listening to this radio station wants to get sick. It stinks that we all have to take these precautionary measures. I can speak from personal experience. It stinks to have the economic results that it's had. But do I think that it could have been shortened? That the slump, for example, using a baseball term, could have been shortened and more effective? Yeah. But you shouldn't just... you shouldn't just leave those decisions up to college football players and coaches, whose decisions are going to be revolved around what they know, which is to play. We saw the Marlins decide on their own when they had four positive tests, as three players and one staff member, to play, because that's what they know how to do. But colleges are the center of research in our nation, and they know better. You just have to listen to the other side of the campus. I don't like it either.
I think that when you see the players banding together, like Trevor Lawrence and the midnight appeal they made the other night in the hashtag We Want to Play, and Ian Book and other prominent college athletes joined the cause, you respect where they're coming from. And you feel this real sense of disappointment, profound disappointment for even especially the seniors who are having to, if they play in the spring, it's going to be an unusual situation. It's going to be difficult circumstances. And there's no guarantee that seniors who want to play in the NFL would play a spring season, because they might opt out, and likely would, to preserve themselves for the NFL draft. So I feel that sense of empathy for them, Layla. At the same time, I think the Big Ten was the adult in the room. And then I feel like they followed the Mid-American Conference's lead, which followed the Ivy League, which followed a lot of administrators who made the difficult call for them. This is in their best interest. They're trying to, you know, make the decision because they are not professionals. And I do wonder how different this decision would be if college players had unified several years earlier when they talked about forming a union and being treated as employees. I do think that this would be a different type of discussion if college athletes were treated as employees, because the professionalization of what they do would force you to look at it in a different way, because we're not having the similar types of discussions with the NFL, because the NFL, it's an occupation. It is, they're professionals. They're getting paid for this. And I wonder if that would change the way these decisions were being made in college sports if they were indeed not trying to preserve this idea of amateurism.
Yeah, and you know what? When the facts change, we change. So once it becomes a necessity to have a situation where you might need a union or players might need to leave early to go play, then let them. If the NCAA really cared about players' livelihoods, and if they're that adamant on wanting to play, declare early. I'm pretty sure agents would figure out a way to make their money and get players to teams and let them go. So that way they're professionals and they don't have to worry about that. And you can be protected by the financial stability and infrastructure that the NFL has. If that's okay, really feel about it, if you want them to play, go let them play. But at the college level, under the current setup, they don't have that capability. We saw schools like Stanford say that they were getting rid of other sports because they financially cannot handle the burden. How do you financially handle the burden of a lasting effect to a player's career based on coronavirus or something else? And what's funny to me is they take their body health so seriously, their arthroscopic health, that they want to sit out to preserve it, but they don't care as much about their lungs and their cardiovascular system when nobody knows how to treat this.
When you're talking about the rights that players should have, and college players specifically, are you suggesting that, okay, now that you say you have a Big Ten quarterback, say Justin Fields at Ohio State, if he wants to now go to Wake Forest because they're playing football down there and he wants to stay eligible and stay active, should the NCAA waive the transfer penalty and allow these players to become quasi-free agents and go and do what they wish if they want to find a conference where they can actually play football?
I think the question then becomes, how much does the NCAA want to rule everyone? Because at that point, you're giving the conferences their own autonomy even further. And right now, conference autonomy is based on TV deals mostly and the revenue and how they organize the schedules. So I don't know that that sets the right precedent if it's virus-based. The NCAA could come down and say, this isn't what we want to do, like they did with March Madness. I don't know why it's such a different situation with the respective Power 5 conferences, except for the fact that it probably has to do with money.
These are good questions that maybe Jerry DiNardo can help us answer. And I think that he is a guy who has coached at a high level. He is a guy who is a Big Ten Network analyst, and he will join us next to have this conversation with him. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network college football analyst, NCAA. Mully and Haw's college football expert.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today. We're pleased to welcome Jerry DiNardo, a guy from the Big Ten Network, the analyst and former football coach, done it all in college football. He joined us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, Layla.
Jerry, yesterday was a difficult day for everybody in the Big Ten, all college football fans in the Midwest, and we saw a decision announced that we felt like it was maybe inevitable, but still difficult to hear. Was it the right decision in your view?
Well, it was based on the health of the players, certainly. I don't know that you can argue against that. I think the timing was unusual, maybe, and people wondered what's changed in such a short time a couple of weeks ago. You know, David and Layla, you know that I want to say the Ivy League canceled 7 weeks ago today. And so for the Big Ten to wait that long, I think is good news and bad news. I think everybody was just trying to hang in there. We have three conferences still trying to hang in there. But it just seems like every day there's less and less chance that this is going to happen. Commissioner Warren, in a short time in that position, has been ahead of most of the other conferences in making decisions. And I'll be surprised, I think, if the other three conferences wind up playing. I sure hope they do if they think that's the right thing, if they can keep the players safe.
Jerry, David brought up a pretty good question just a few minutes ago, and I want your opinion on it, because we saw the NCAA act as a single body when they decided to, at the right time, which was the right decision, do away with March Madness in the tournament in March. But the Power Five conferences in football having different decisions isn't good if you're the governing body who's supposed to keep them all straight. What does this say about the autonomy and just the power of the NCAA when you're seeing these conferences try to go their own ways on these things?
Well, you know, Layla, it's an unusual structure in college football, and there's a lot of discussion going on that there should be one commissioner or one czar. The NCAA does not control the national championship competition, right? It's the only sport that the NCAA doesn't control. That's why you never see that blue NCAA logo on the football field during the playoffs and the bowl games. You see it on the FCS fields and so on and so forth. They control the FCS and the Division II and Division III. But the five conferences are controlled by the commissioners, and those five people have all the power when it comes to competition. Now, not the rules. The NCAA still controls the rules. So we have a situation here where there is not one voice that represents Division I-A or FBS college football. And so there's a debate going on now whether there should be a czar or whether there should not be. This is an example of those of us who believe there should not be, because I believe the game should be regulated regionally. And this is also an argument for those that believe it should. And then as an example is we have five conferences making five different decisions. So the NCAA in this situation is not a major player at all. They are as much a bystander as the rest of us.
Jerry, Nebraska responded with a statement that I think was the equivalent of a coach getting in the face of a referee after a bad call. It was emotional, and it was direct, and it was threatening. And I wonder if you think that whether it's Nebraska or whether it's Ohio State or whether it's somebody else, is this going to result in the Big Ten splintering, and is that even a realistic possibility given the bylaws of the conference?
I believe no and no, David. I did on the tailgate show that we have at the Big Ten Network, I do End Zone to End Zone with a different person on campus every Friday for our Saturday show. And I had the honor to do Coach Osborne a couple of years ago, and I asked him about joining the Big Ten. And what Coach Osborne said is, we were being left out in the cold. The Big Eight was going in one direction. We didn't really have a home. And the fact that we could join the Big Ten has not only saved our football program, but saved our university on a lot of different levels and all that. I think every school has to decide what kind of partner they want to be and what kind of teammate they want to be. And when we preach to our players teamwork and partnership and one for all and all for one, and then we have a school that doesn't like a decision, and I don't believe this has ever happened. Maybe back when only one team could go to a bowl game. You remember the big debate between Michigan and I can't remember the other team that was going to the bowl game, and Bo got real mad about the whole thing and criticized the decision and all that. But to be a member of a conference and go public with the fact that you disagree to a point, you can disagree, but disagree to a point where you want to continue to play with another conference or as an independent, I don't know that we've ever seen that, and it seems to me that every school gets a choice to decide to be a good teammate and or a good partner, and I think we're watching 14 schools in the Big Ten make that decision.
Well, I think Nebraska set that precedent when they left the Big 12 and then went to the Big Ten, so I can't say I'm totally surprised that we're seeing a little bit of that pop up now, but Jerry, let's talk about something that's also been discussed earlier by people in theories. having worked with kids yourself and knowing how many people you have to keep an eye on any football team, what is your opinion of how people think that they are safer playing football and in these isolated situations, even though they have to still play a game and travel, than they are, say, being out and about in the population?
Yeah, I honestly, Layla, I think it's a ridiculous argument. I think what they're saying is they're safer with us than if they were regular college students or they were college athletes that wanted to go and play the fool, right? The three of us have a choice to wear a mask and take care of ourselves if we want to. To say that when I was a college student, if the head coach said to me, you're safer with the team than you are by yourself, I would take that as an insult to my intelligence, okay? There's no way in the world that I could be safer at practice than I could be at home in my apartment. Now, could I be safer at practice than on the beach? Could I be safer at practice than partying? Could I be safer with the team than playing video games, drinking, playing the fool with a bunch of guys in an apartment? Of course. But to say to me that locker room environment is safer than me going home with other people that I know have not tested positive, putting a mask on when I went shopping, and so on and so forth, it's a ridiculous argument. Unless you close the circle and say, you're safer with us than you are if you act like we've seen a lot of people your age act. But we get to make that choice, Layla. When I was 20 years old, I didn't need someone to protect me. I made my own decision. So I don't buy that argument, not one bit. I almost think it's insulting to the student athletes.
Joined by Jerry DiNardo from the Big Ten Network here on Mully and Haw with Layla Rahimi in for Mully today. Jerry, when you look ahead at what the spring model in terms of a schedule could look like, what would you recommend, and how would you answer people that believe that you're really putting these players at a higher risk by asking them to complete essentially two football seasons in one calendar year?
Okay, so here's what I've been working on this for months, okay? First thing we decide is we won't be back to normal until the fall of 2022. If we start with that premise, then we say, let's try to get between 16 and 20 games played in the spring of 21 and the fall of 21. Okay? So when do we start? Can we start February, March? The issue is the time between the two seasons, right? That's the conflict. That's the problem. So we lean on our medical people to tell us that we need 110 days. I think last year I counted in between Ohio State's fall and spring practice was 136 days. So let's say the medical people tell us we need 100 days in between, just to make the argument clearer because of numbers. We need 100 days in between. So maybe we play 8 games in the spring and 8 games in the fall, and we play a regular schedule in 2022. Now, guys, remember this, okay? Not everybody who started in the spring will start in the fall 2021 season, right? Because you'll have a graduation. So let's say I'm a player, but I'm a senior, and my senior year is the spring of 2021, and I play 1,000 snaps, okay? Well, when we come to the fall season, another new player is going to play those snaps. The biggest problem we have is the repeat starter that is going to start in the spring of 21 and the fall of 21 and play the 1,000 snaps. Well, no football or a little football. So we literally might count the snaps of some players. And we could say if you've played 1,000 snaps in the spring of 2021, you can't play in the fall of 2021 until maybe October. We give them more time. Remember, most of your roster doesn't play. You have 85 scholarships, 105 people in camp, and 120 after camp ends. Most of your team does not play. So if the health of the player, if the medical people say he played 1,000 snaps, he can't play another 1,000 snaps in 3 months, 4 months, he doesn't play. Or he doesn't play until the second month of the season. So I believe this can be done. I, the people that say it can't be done need to tell us why. Now, whether my plan works or not, I don't know. But that's where I would start the discussion. And the best thing for coaches and players in Nebraska is to stop complaining about what just happened. And like Jeff Brohm said at Purdue, let's turn our energies to the spring. That's what Barry Alvarez said. Let's turn our energies to the spring. We teach our players constantly, hey, move on. Hey, we lost the game. Hey, don't make the same mistake twice. Well, how about practicing what we preach?
Well, Jerry, you also bring up the idea that, say, the college football playoff is going to be okay with that. We talked about it earlier, but at the end of the day, the Big Ten is a huge part of that college football playoff. So how would you see that working out in this?
It may not be a college football playoff. Layla, you mean in between the two seasons?
Yeah, or theoretically, if you think everybody can get to full strength.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. I mean, I haven't thought so. The college football playoff hasn't even entered my brain in the plan and all that. And maybe I'm on the wrong side of the argument there. I haven't thought through that. Again, I go, is conference games better than no games? Is spring better than no football? Is spring and fall 21 better than better that we can play if we don't have the CFP? You know, I mean, I we're going to give up something. I mean, we're going through a phase that we're going to come out the other end with a new normal. But in the meantime, things aren't going to look the same.
Jerry, I can't wait for the Rose Bowl on Memorial Day weekend. That's going to be something to look forward to. So. Thanks so much, Jerry. Great stuff today.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Layla.
Jerry
you.
DiNardo, Big Ten Network analyst, talking about college football. A lot of good stuff there. A lot of passion. You can hear it in his voice. The old coach in Jerry DiNardo has never left him.
No. And I love that he had been thinking this through. I hate to throw a wrench in his plan with the playoff idea, but, you know, people are going to want their slice of the pie.
These are questions. We have questions, and he tried to answer, and he did a good job of that. We have more questions for Ozzie Guillen. Like, what's he doing dancing on the set before Sox games that he's doing it quite well, quite often? Ozzie Guillen next. Mully and Hall, Layla Rahimi in for Mully. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Ozzie Guillen.
I'm the captain of the boat.
Former White Sox manager.
I mean, I don't know how much payment I watch.
I go to watch the All-Star game? Hell no.
Talking the latest around Major League Baseball. Ozzie Guillen.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today, and we're pleased to welcome Ozzie Guillen to the program. And Ozzie joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Ozzie.
Good morning, how you guys doing? My sister, what's up?
Good morning, Ozzie. It's been too long, and it hasn't even been that long.
Hi, sister. How you guys doing?
It's fun to reunite you guys, Ozzie. First, let's start with what you're doing on the set. Where did you learn those dance moves? It looked very natural to you. Light on your feet, Ozzie.
Well, when I grew up, you start dancing before you do anything. Before you learn the ABC, you better know how to dance, because that's common in our culture. That thing is, I think it comes natural. You know, that you can dance in our group. They will bully you for the rest of your life.
I feel like that's very true. Ozzie, you've talked a lot to me on TV as well about the Sox need for a vocal leader in the clubhouse, a veteran presence to police. And Dallas Keuchel came out, as we know, said what he said, saying players need to take more professional at-bats, be more present. What did you think of not just what he said, but how the Sox came out after that and beat the Tigers 8-4?
Well, it's about time. It's about time. We talked about that for the last couple of years. White Sox need a leader, a real leader, not just a guy, just be a leader when they're playing well. We think, you know, Bruce, he was the leader. He was the leader, but it was a different leadership. And Bruce is not the guy going to be vocal. I think he's going to be a leader by example on the field. But I was very happy to see somebody call the players off the way he did. And that, to me, I don't think he just got there to say that. I think that it's been built. I think he's been having conversation with teammates. Maybe a couple of teammates told him about how they was dealing with that for the last couple of years. And finally, you see the team flat, And it, you know, you take a lot of responsibility. Call them out, the teammates, and especially when your teammate agree with you, that sounds a lot better. And that made me happy. Not because they win last night, just because finally somebody step up and do what they're supposed to do. What you're a veteran player.
Ozzie, when he criticized his teammates for not taking professional at-bats, I think a lot of people thought specifically he was talking about Eloy Jimenez. He might have been talking about others. When you watched the Sox on the night that Dallas Keuchel criticized them, did you see the same types of things and the same sort of lapses?
Well, it's funny because when, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how great the offensive team this team was. I think they have a lot of potential to do what they did last night. Obviously, Cleveland Indians got a good pitching staff. They slowed down a little bit, and I said in the air a couple of times they will slow them down, but I don't think they can stop them. And they've seen the last couple of days. But yes, I see. When you don't score, when you don't do anything, you left a lot of people on base. Seem like you flat. And obviously, it's not fun, especially when it's not fans in the ballpark. And you see the team more flatter than ever, and you don't see anything. Everybody rooting for each other, and all of a sudden, okay, we're not hitting. We panic. Well, I don't say they panic, but they're acting like it, because when they was hitting, they was jumping in the clubhouse, dugout, dancing in the clubhouse. You know, I mean, high five everyone. Then all of a sudden, a couple of days later, the bats disappear, and all of a sudden they also disappear with the attitude. I think the hardest thing in baseball is just go to the park every day and have to have the same attitude. And I don't think the White Sox, the last few years, they just go to the ballpark. Hopefully they can put numbers and win the game, the many games they can, and make the money. Now this year is a different monster. Very different. And I don't think they realize that too. When Keuchel come from another team with the winning experience, winning attitude, it was easy for him to find out something we're missing here. And I'm very, very glad they did it, because it seemed like everybody was taking a bat like, okay, just give it tomorrow. And remember, every game is important. Every at bat is important. Every pitch is important, because this, we can see, you know, you see the one day one team is in first place, next day another team is in first place. You'd be surprised. Marlins is in first place. Colorado is in first place. You know what I mean? Anything can happen in a short season.
Ozzie, you mentioned that runners in scoring position, and the Sox were really solid last night. 4-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Those are numbers that we don't normally get to see. And I said, yes, it is against Detroit, and it was against Tyler Alexander, Carson Fulmer. But what's the importance of trying to put together those at-bats and really keep that momentum going, even though their schedule is a little mixed up right now, given what's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny, Leila. It's funny because when you beat a team you're supposed to beat, it's not a big deal. But when you got beat by them, they make it a big deal. And it's not easy place to win when you expect to win, and they pick you to win, and they pick you, you know, all over the Science White Sox Fest. We are all excited. We all talk about this team. We all talk about its offense. And I bet you if the pitching was poor last couple of weeks or last week, people were like, oh, you know, we don't have a good pitching staff. But all of a sudden, the offense, it was failing. And people, that's what people was talking about. And I think every team, you got to go out there. You got to compete like it's the last game. No, you can turn it off and on when you're facing Cleveland and Minnesota. You got to stay in the same level no matter who you play against. I think the White Sox have easier schedule. You know what I mean? They're going to play Cubs. Cubs will be on fire, playing great baseball, very quietly, playing great baseball. And we don't know we're going to face San Luis. And we see, but their schedule is in favor of the White Sox. Hopefully they know that and they take advantage of that.
Ozzie, I saw you address this on the post game last night on NBC Sports Chicago. Ricky Renteria hinted that Yoan Moncada likely to get the day off today. What did you think about that decision and making it this early?
You know, I wish I was there to know better, because it happened one day to another. But, you know, I mean, I think Moncada is a very, I know what it says, a fragile guy. He needs a day off once in a while. But it's time to those guys understand you got to play with soreness. Soreness, it can come from injury. And they had to, I don't know, maybe take care of themselves better. I know they are very good athletes. They take care of themselves better than we did. But, you know, I mean, it's only been playing how many games? 12 games, 14 games, and we give people a day off. I thought this year, if it's 60 games, you play 60 games no matter what. And obviously, we have a couple of days off, plus team can't play because the corona. I against that, but I think Venturia know better than I do about his player. But meanwhile, I think we start learn, you know, teach those guys just to be out there and perform. That's why I appreciate Hermie Snyder. I think White Sox miss him very much, to push those players to get on the field and do the best they can. Obviously, like I say, you know me, Moncada rest today, will rest tomorrow. It's 2 days to recover himself. Hopefully, after these 2 days, just go out there and play the rest of the season. It's not Moncada thing, everybody. You're supposed to be in the starting lineup. You should be there every day. Young talent, young team. I don't see why you have to take it. You know, take a day off. I know when Renteria say, well, you know, we push him to be in the opening day lineup, but you know, it's just like, well, that's their job, and hopefully they can be there every day.
Yeah, and that's something that you've brought up before too, Ozzie. When he's had days off before, what's the significance? Dylan Cease takes the mound. I know it's an early game on NBC Sports Chicago, 12:10 start. And you've been so positive when it comes to what Dylan Cease has as far as his stuff, his potential. He wasn't completely happy with his last one. He walked the leadoff hitter in 4 or 5 innings, but he still threw 5 shutout innings. What is your impression of Cease so far, and is he headed in the right direction, even though he's had some trouble with the walks?
I think so. You know, first of all, I've seen him pitch. I talked to him just a little bit. I think he not believe in himself. I don't think he believe in himself. He not believe he got a good stuff. Maybe he hear about it, and the people talk about him. But I think when he's on the mound, he's a different guy. He got to attack his strike zone. To me, personal, maybe I'm wrong. I think he's got the best stuff in that rotation. Maybe 3 guys, because the rest of the guys, they don't count. The 3 guys, Keiko, Cholito, him, he got the best stuff. He's not the best pitcher, but he got the best stuff. He got to look up to Keiko, to Cholito, to approach them. I think, obviously, you got to see next to Keiko, talk to Keiko, pick his mind, how he think, how he attack people. Don't be afraid when you don't have good stuff. Go out there and do it. And every time this kid's on the mound, I think the White Sox go through 90 shutout, because it's that good. But it's not what I say. It's not what I think. It's what he say. It's what he think. And I think it's time for him to move on. I think he's been pitching enough in the big league. I think if he got enough innings to study better in the big league. And if Cease not pitch well, I don't think White Sox going anywhere. Believe me, Cease got to pitch good, because only this 5 is number 2 guys. This 5 about 3 to 5 guys, and the number 4 and number 5, they don't have anybody yet, legit. And I think if Cease don't be what he's supposed to be, it will be hard for the White Sox to compete in that division right now.
Ozzie, before we let you go, Luis Robert has cooled off a little bit, 11 strikeouts in his last 24 at-bats. What are teams doing differently to get him out?
Well, you know, I mean, this is all about adjustment. You know, obviously, Major League Baseball talking about Robert day in and day out, because he deserves that. He has a great, he start great, start unbelievable. And when you start talking about players and people look at, put attention to you, and you go to the White Sox, not let Robert beat you, making him chase a bad pitch. try to select your best pitch to have. Because sometimes you're like, okay, I got to worry about that guy, that guy, that guy. I don't know who that Robert guy is. All of a sudden you find out what it is. They make an adjustment, the scout report, videos, all this stuff. Every day you got to come here. Every day is a battle, not because you have talent. You got to go by and cruise very easy in baseball. And I think that's what happened right now. I think right now people figure out how they're going to pitch to him. You got to be a little more patient, but not because it's slowed down. They're going to stop him. I think this kid is so good at talent. He has a lot of confidence. And you see him go to the plate with confidence. He's being the same guy. He's not smiling in their face. Everything is by his business. And like I say, they slow him down. I don't think they're going to stop him.
Great stuff, Ozzie. Thank you very much, and keep dancing.
Thank you. Bye, my love.
Thanks, Ozzie. Bye, my love. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Sue. Good to hear about it.
Oh, man, it's coming through the phone lines, Layla. He loves you. His sister, he called you. That was really sweet. You guys had a great rapport on TV, and you have a great rapport on the air here, and you can see that he respects you and obviously likes you. Ozzie was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed working with him, to say the absolute least. And we consider each other pretty much family, so it's always good to talk to Ozzie no matter what the situation. I did not think it was going to be this soon, and I really appreciate it.
That is the voice of Layla Rahimi. She is in for Mully today. Next, we will shift gears, talk to the Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy, coming up next on Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.